Second physics.
Okay, thank you very much, and I'm going to follow the tradition. That is, I really like to thank the organizer of this wonderful workshop. Indeed, it's remarkable that we have been able really to pull it off and bring all this community together. So I feel privileged to address this audience here. And like Nat said, I'm going to talk about relativistic optics, something which is, I think is, for me, represent kind of the second wind of nonlinear optics, if you want, and a new gateway to attosecond physics. Most of the things that I'm going to say, you can find it in a new review article in Review of Modern Physics that we wrote with Toshita Jima and Sergei Bulanov. That's the last issue of Review of Modern Physics. I want also to thank my co-worker, at Michigan, Eric Power, the student, Natalia Narmova, John Neese, who is here, Igor Sokolov, Viktor Yanovsky, Kang Han Hong, Takeshi Matsuoka, Bixu Yu, Anatoly Maxim Shuk, and my new co-workers from LOA, Victor Malka, Jérôme Faure, Anthony Rousse, Kim Tafouk, André Mizerovic, who is here also, and Rodrigo, and Christopher Howe. And I want also to thank Toshita Jima and Sergei Bulanov. Okay, so let's see. The contents of the talk will be as follows. I will talk a little bit about relativistic in terms of, I will try to draw a parallel with bound electron nonlinear optics. Okay? I won't have the time, of course, to do that for, I will pick up only a few examples. But among these examples, we have relativistic rectification, which is called Wakefield by everybody else, basically, but I asked the commission to Toshita Jima to call it this way. You will see why. And and the key, of course, that's the key for high energy electron beams, proton beams, X-ray and gamma beams. Then I will talk about the possibility of producing attosecond pulses of photons and electrons, and very efficiently. Okay. Now, also I will talk about coherent X-ray radiation generation by coherent Thomson scattering. Then I will, discuss, like Christopher has done, has done already, the possibility to go to the Schwinger limit. And then I will give a few examples in high energy physics, general relativity, Hawking radiation, extra dimensions. Finally, I like really to, since I will have the podium here, I would like really to introduce ELI, which is Extreme Light Infrastructure, which is a new infrastructure which is based on an exawatt laser, basically, which is right now has been selected to be on a large infrastructure roadmap of Europe. Okay, so it's very exciting. Okay, so what I like to do is, first of all, when you look at optics, I'm really struck by the fact that this field doesn't seem to have natural limits, okay? Only horizon, okay? And that's true for myself. I've been in the field for 40 years almost. And I like to start with this peak power pulse duration conjecture, okay? Okay, so the conjecture goes, of course we know that in order to get high peak power, you must decrease the pulse duration, okay? That is pretty easy. Now, the things that you may not realize that in order to get short pulses, you must increase the intensity, okay? It's a conjecture, it has not been shown. This is something I would like to do, or maybe this could be one of the topics of this meeting, by the way. But indeed, it's true. If you look at, for instance, the evolution of short pulses as a function of EL, okay? And you pick, you know, when the short pulses came about, the modlock came about around 1970 or so, when it became serious. 1970, you know, you were in a picosecond regime. Picosecond regime. And then what you were using? You were using saturable absorber. Okay? Saturable absorber. Well, saturable absorber, it takes only megawatt per square centimeter to saturate the medium, and then you can get your laser modlock. Then if you really want to go shorter, you have to go higher in intensity and then use something which is not resonant like a saturable absorber, but something which relies, say, on N2, which is not resonant and a large bandwidth. And then you get, you know, indeed, you can go to the few optical limits. Now you are already pretty high. You are already at 10 to the 10 watt per square centimeter, gigawatt per square centimeter. Okay. Now, if you want really to go shorter, then what you have to do, you have basically to ionize the material, the medium. Okay. And what you do, and then you go into the attosecond regime. Now, if you now really want to go to, and I have a little bit of a problem here because my conjecture maybe doesn't work, because here, right here until now, we were gaining intensity, okay? We were shortening the pulse, but we were gaining the intensity. We are not losing the energy. Well, here it's not true. You know that we are producing attosecond pulses, but these pulses are not, you know, very energetic, of course. So you are losing intensity. So my conjecture here doesn't really work well. But anyway, now, I want to go into the Zepto regime, what I have to do, of course, is now to invoke now some new nonlinear effect, and you will see that this will be given to us by the more relativistic nonlinearity. So I have to go to high intensity, of course. And now, if I look at this chart here, it shows the evolution of intensity as a function of years. Then, of course, you can see the pattern, okay? The short pulses, clearly, roughly, okay? And right now, what you want to do is really to be in this limit here. What has been mostly discussed in this audience, of course, is this regime here, right? Around 10 to the 14, 15, this regime here. Okay, so what we are now, as I said, we have to increase the intensity in order to get shorter. Okay? So we have to go above 10 to the 18 watt per square centimeters, you know, in the visible at least. And right now, I just want to mention that now the record in terms of intensity was obtained is at something around 10 to the 22 watt per square centimeters. And so you are already in very, very, very relativistic limit. Now the ELI proposal that we are proposing will be mostly at around 10 to the 26 watt per square centimeter. By the way, the nonlinear QED here is at 10 to the 29. In order 10 to the 29 watt per square centimeters, you know, it will take you something like a zeta watt system focused on one micron, and the zeta watt will be like a 10 NIF system, 10 megajoule system, 10 times megajoule system, okay? 10 femtosecond, focused on one micron. So it will be donc a formidable task to go there, but hopefully by using the shrinking of the pulse, we should be able to do it. Shrinking of the pulse and shrinking of the Rayleigh volumes, we should be able to do it. Of course, so right now we have been in the relativistic limit. With ELI, we will be in the ultra-relativistic limit. I define the ultra, what's my definition of ultra-relativist now? It's when the proton will start to be relativist, okay? And that will be around 10 to the 24 watt per square centimeter. So Eli will be two orders of magnitude above this. So, but with some relativistic, I will call relativistic boost, okay, relativistic compression, we may get into the 10 to the 29 or so regime. Okay, so let's talk now. I just want to mention, of course, in order to go into the relativistic regime, the systems are rather big, okay? This is a system which is has been designed to be a petawatt system, okay? So it's bigger, of course, than the 100 terawatt system. You know, but when you are for this type of system, the size of the system is basically, you know, it's proportional to the energy, okay? So 100 terawatt, 10 petawatt, a factor 10, you of course find this factor in the size of the system. Now, and okay, I just cannot resist to show that was, we have shown the 10 to the 22 watt per square centimeters by using deformable mirrors, and you know, it's absolutely beautiful result. Where we have very short focal spot limited by the diffraction, 0.8 microns, okay? Remarkable result. Of course, if you don't use the DM, it's what you get. And you have a naught square here, 10 to the 4, okay? So very large already. I just want to mention. But you don't have to have this very huge laser, big systems. What's attracting to me is the fact that you can be in a relativistic limit with some millijoule type systems, okay? As long as you work in the lambda cube regime, and here we have the lambda cube, of course, is self, if you understand it. What you have to do is to focus the pulse in space, of course, okay, by using the DM, deformable mirror, and so on. You have to focus it in time, okay? So you have all your photons in this football, you know, volumes. Okay, the number of photons, of course, will be about 10 to the 16, 10 to the 17. Ron Chen, you know, was giving a talk, just mentioned to me that nonlinear optics, in fact, when it started, you know, started with one photon per pulse, okay? Boundary photon. Okay, relativistic optics, of course, you know that if we use A0 as this normalized vector potential that we have used for this conference here, for very, very small A0, much, much smaller than one, of course, the transverse motion, the motion of the electron, it's mainly transverse, okay? And it's proportional to A naught, okay? Along the Z is proportional to A naught square. So if A naught is much less than one, of course, A naught square is much, much smaller than one. So most of the displacement is along this direction. Now, of course, when A naught is very large, okay, more than one, and in the case of Hercules, it can be a knot of 100, you can see that most of the displacement, of course, is along the propagation axis. And this has a very, very important consequence. If now you, this is, of course, that was a single particle. Now, if you shine your beam into a plasma, what you are going to do, you are going to push the electrons forward, leave the ion behind. You are going to set up, of course, this very, very large electrostatic field. So what you have done, in a way, is you took this is what I'm absolutely fascinated by that, and that's the reason why I call that relativistic rectification, once again, with the permission of Toshi, is you have transformed this electromagnetic wave in an electrostatic field, okay, and in a DC field. And what's remarkable is that this DC field is as big as a transverse field. And I'm going to show you that. you have to just accept it just for a moment. Okay? So, and if I say that, of course, if I know the intensity, I can find easily through using the impedance, the medium impedance, I can find the field. Okay, so for 10 to the 18 watt per square centimeter, I have 2 teravolt per meter. For 10 to the 23 watt per square centimeter, I have 0.6 petavolt per meter. Okay, just to give you an idea what 0.6 petavolt per meter is, I'm taking 10 to the 23 watt per square centimeter because this corresponds to a petawatt system. Petawatt, you know, focus on one micron, that would give us 10 to the 23. That corresponds to 0.6 petavolt per meter, as I said, which means that it's slack, okay, 50 GeV, 3 km long, on 10 micron. Okay? Okay. It is also, if you have to build a peta electron volt, okay, it will take a meters, and it will take, for you, it will, the accelerator will have to go around the world. Okay. So, but anyway, I think now, if that's true, and you will see that it's true, that if indeed we can really produce this enormous field over 10 microns, you have a new field. It's a relativistic microelectronics. Relativistic electronic, of course, exists. Okay, slack is a relativistic electronic device. Okay, the SRF and all the big machines are relativistic electronic device. But here you can maybe have a chance to put everything on the micrometers. And do not exaggerate. You are going to see that. Well, you want also to be this talk provocative, by the way. So this is in this spirit. So this is Fermi, you know, this accelerator. So I used to find this field, this DC field that we could in principle get just, as I said, in back of the envelope calculations. Turns out that Sasha Pukov did a simulation, but he almost forgot, but I didn't, okay? And I just reminded him at this meeting. He just took a 10 to the 23 watt per square centimeter beam, something that we have, and he's shooting this beam into a 50 micrometer target. And what does he get? It's a bunch, of course, of electrons in front, ions in the back, and of course you have this electrostatic field in between. Okay? Now, so 10 to the 23 watt. This is a really peak simulation, you know, done by Sasha Pukov, the guy who really predicted the Betatron oscillation, predicted the bull regime and the acceleration in the bubble regime. I'm sorry. Predicted the high harmonic generation solid. And you can see that the field that you are getting here is 300 teravolt, 0.3 petavolt per meter. So I'm not very far off, okay? It's amazing. So you can see that at least this is backed up by simulation. Now, is it true? Of course, this thing works because we are aware of this famous nature where the three groups basically show about at the same time that they could accelerate electrons using this bubble regime. They could accelerate the electrons just by shooting the pulses into a nozzle jet and a gas jet and produce, you know, quasi-monoenergetic electrons. Okay, now these three groups were the group, of course, LBR, the group at LOA, and the group at Rutherford. Okay? And you are getting the result from the LOA group showed, obviously, something like this distribution is broken now with a peak, you know, right there, of 170 megaelectron volt. The beam also, the beam quality is very good. So this is it's very, very nice. And also I was pleased to see that am I going to, get it or not? Huh. I have to move it to one side. Okay. Oh, here it is. Oh, damn it. Ah! Yeah! Don't go away. Oh, no. Let's do a... Okay, yeah. I was pleased also that the group at Michigan, at CUOS, in the Focus Center, were able also to get a very, very nice quasi-mono-energetic beam. You know, this is about 160 MeV, and the delta here, the delta E, is about 15 MeV. So the 15 over 150, so you have about 10%, which is quite good. Now, also, if you want to be to do better, you can help. You know, you can help the reliability of the system by injecting, by using optical injection, something which was proposed some time ago by Don and Eric Ezoway. Okay, and here they adopted the Eric Ezoway way. And they have a pump beam and injection beams, and you will see that by just changing the position of the injection with respect to the pump, the timing, they are able really to tune the the energy of the beam. Okay, so this is quite remarkable, and they can go up to 300 MeV. But you see, it's a continuous tuning, which is remarkable. Okay, now let's talk about attosecond. Okay, of course, we have discussed attosecond generation. I will call by the bound electrons, you know, in the bound electron limit, you know, extensively at this workshop, and I'm not going to go over that. Now, I'm going to talk about the possibility of doing, of course, attosecond in a relativistic regime. And before I do that, of course, I have to mention the work of high harmonic generation, because short courses, like for attosecond, start basically with the generation of high harmonics. And this is, you see that quite a bit of work has been done, not as much as the cast, of course, but quite a bit of work has been done with solids, and starting with Bulanov, who was the first way to suggest the idea, and all these guys here. And really, of course, it relies on the relativistic motion of the electron, of the critical surface subject, you know, to this very, very large Pondramatic pressure. So now, Sasha Pukov, you know, some time ago predicted, okay, that was 2004, right, a few years ago, predicted that the high harmonics, if we were doing well this high harmonic generation, that is, that the pulse will really interact with the solid and not with the preformed plasma, then we could really get, you know, a very, very large amount of harmonics. You're talking about harmonic 10,000, and the decay here of the intensity as a function of harmonics is a power law, really mild power law. It goes like omega over point negative 2.5, something like this. Okay, and this is for different A naught. Okay, so something very, very reachable here. Now, so, and you pointed out, of course, the possibility of producing, you know, zeptosecond pulses. Okay, now this work has been done in a 1D limit. Okay. So 1D at 10 to the 22, you know, involves, of course, a lot of energy, because 1D means large pot. Okay? So you have to be able really to put this intensity over a large pot, which means large amount of intensity, large laser, low red rate, I mean, you name it. So Okay, by the way, this, the work of Sasha was vindicated recently, you know, by this beautiful work from Rutherford, which really showed this power law. Okay, no, so now we are really on a good scientific ground. Okay? Good. So, now, as I said, the work of Sasha was 1D. Okay? Well, we know that we are not 1D. Okay? And also, if you really want to minimize the amount of energy, you really want to focus the beam, and ideally in the lambda cube regime. Well, we know, of course, what happened to the beam going into a medium like this. You have relativistic self-focusing. And now, this is, of course, under-dense medium. If you go over-dense medium, of course, you have something which is, we are going to see the reflection of the beam, which is going to be modified by the fact that the electrons are going to, I mean, the critical surface is going to be pushed by the electromagnetic field. Okay? So, I ask Natalia Anomova to simulate for me, for us, you know, what will happen, of course, to this type of reflection. Okay? Because this was unknown. And so she did it. So I just also remind you a little bit the setup here. So the beam is focused on 1 micron, okay? Because we want really to minimize the amount of energy. And also, if you focus the beam on 1 micron, that is you're focusing the beam on the fundamental mode, okay? You cannot have any high spatial frequency in your fundamental mode, okay? So you are sure, certain to have a very, very nice and clean and smooth, you know, mirror, so to speak. Okay, so and so what happened when you do that? Okay, of course, you are pushing the electrons, you are leaving more or less the ions beyond because the pulse is extremely short, only few cycles here. And but you see, look at the curvature of the critical surface. Okay, the curvature of the critical surface changes. And so you see that you can expect to have radiation this way, radiation this way, radiation this way, and so on. Okay? For each cycle. Okay? So here is a result, the 3D simulation, and I'm going to give you, of course you can see the dent you are making into the plasma. It's not symmetric because you have an E field. Okay, the E field, if you say polarized like this, the E field is going to slash back and forth its electrons along these directions, and on, of course, on the S plane, it won't be, like, it will be symmetrical. So you expect that the symmetry is going to be broken here, and this is a line art of the different lobe I showed you. So you start, let's suppose that you have a few cycle pulse, you see these lobes, a little bit like it was mentioned, you know, Monday, you know, about the atlas second pulses. You have, let's suppose that the lobe number one will be produced, you know, by this portion of the waveform. Okay? Now, the lobe number two, you know, because this thing is sensitive to, of course, the sign and amplitude, okay? The lobe number two here will be produced by this part of the waveform. And lobe number three will be, because it's the most intense here, and positive in this direction, will be produced by this part of the wave. Okay? So what is nice is that here you are producing a short pulse, and you will see, you are going to see that it's short. In fact, it's about 200, in this case, 200 attosecond pulses, but they are kind of isolated, okay, automatically. The efficiency, of course, is important. It's good because it's just a mirror, okay, to start with. So, so here you have about 200 attosecond pulses and so on. So this is... now, of course, if that is true, we should really be able to see that, okay? We should be able to see these different lobes, okay? So we try to do that. If we take now our laser, and we really dim the laser intensity much below a knot of one, then you see the spot. Okay? Now, if you increase the intensity and you are in a relativistic limit, then you should start to see this load. Okay? And this is what we observe. Okay, so now what is important, of course, with this technique, it is scalable. Okay? It is scalable, it's a scalable isolated attosecond technique, okay, for generation technique. And how does it scale? First of all, you have to adjust, you have to adjust the electron density as a function with the A naught, with the intensity of the beam. Okay? Because for large electron density, the plasma is going to be very stiff. Okay? You are going to need a lot of intensity. For weak electron density, the plasma is going to be soft. So you are not going to need as much intensity. So the relation is simply that A naught divided by A naught, where A naught is a normalized to N critical electron density in your plasma. So you have to have this relation, A naught over N naught equal 2. If you have that, this is what you get. You get, as a function of the intensity, A naught, function of the intensity, you get this relation T over 600 divided by A naught. Okay? Sasha in his paper found 450 something divided by A naught. Two independent groups working on and found basically what I found, basically the same result. So this is of course extremely exciting. You are of course 100, A naught of 100. It's very, very doable. Remember that for this application, we don't need Rayleigh range. Okay? We have just a critical surface. Okay? We don't have a way to sustain this 10 to the 23 over, you know, a big distance. So only a few microns. Okay? So that's very easy. But so here, we should be right now able to produce pulses in a range of 6 attoseconds. Okay? Of course, with ELI, with 10 to the 26, I don't know where we are going to be. We should be in the vector second regime. Okay. N. Well, I mean, first of all, you can choose the material, you can ionize the material, you can differently, you can pre-ionize the material, so you can just adjust. But it's not very difficult, okay? I don't think that's going to be. Okay, so now, of course, now we understand that we have a tool now, really, to go near the Schwinger limit, okay? And with really relatively modest size system, not a zeta watt system, okay? We talk about it. I'm not going to discuss that more, but it takes, as I said, 10 to the 29 watt per second just to break the pair, we should of course observe vacuum polarization much below, you know, like we observe nonlinear effect much below the dielectric breakdown of material. Okay, so I think I'm expecting something like that. So let's see. Let's do the math a little bit. Could we get into the critical field with a modest size system? Let's take Hercules, for instance. Hercules has shown 10 to the 22 watt per square centimeter, A naught of 10 to the 4th. Pulse duration then should correspond to 6 attoseconds. Wavelength, of course, the wavelength now is less, so the focal volume will be much less. We estimate something like 10 minus 8. And efficiency about 10%. Okay, I mean, not really stretched numbers. And so 10 to the 22 watt per square centimeter should produce 10 to the 28 or so watt per square centimeter. So you should see pair breaking. Now, just want to remind you a little bit about this, what I think is a very attractive way to produce very short pulses. It's, first of all, we can, with a lambda cube, we can really use the energy very, very well, okay? We provide pulse isolation, it's built into the technique. predicted efficiency very good, 10 minus 1, 10 minus 2. So, as I said, because we focus the beam, the single mode that you have, obviously, and the fact that the ports are very short, suppress the instabilities, so that's beam quality. And it relies on relativistic plasma. So plasma is happy, you know, if really the higher the intensity, the happier is the plasma. So this is so this should be scalable really to kilojoules. And so this is using something, I mean, technique which has to be, of course, worked on. So now let's talk about at the second generation now of electrons, okay? Not just photons, but electrons now. Okay. Now, if we take this embodiment, okay, of light-matter interaction, well, you really you have the target now is at an angle, okay, with respect to the pulse. What Natalia showed in her simulation was that if you shoot this type of target this way at this A naught of 10, which A naught of 10 means 10 to the 20 watt per square centimeters, with this type of electron densities and so on, what you are getting are really at the second pulses in this direction here, and very short electron pulses. Okay, very short, much shorter than the wavelength of light. Okay, so that is very nice because you see this is much shorter than the wavelength of light. So if Tuesday, Phil told us about what he can do, you know, when a bunch of electrons are much shorter than the wavelength of light. Of course, then you have scattering. You are going to have Compton scattering, but this time it's going to be coherent Compton scattering, okay? Because, of course, here, if all these electrons were diffused, okay, the scattering, okay, will go like the square root of n, okay? But now, if, if of course, these electrons are bunched, you know, very close, together, then the scattering, of course, goes like n square. Okay, so you are very much in a case where, you know, where in Riemann scattering, Brillouin scattering, where you don't observe much. Okay, but as soon as you start really now to organize the medium, then you have this deficiency that jumps enormously. So now you have these electrons with a gamma of 25, 30 MeV, so gammas of almost 100. 50, 100, something like that. So you are going to have, of course, this relativistic boost, okay, of 4 gamma square. If you come now with this red light, it will be red, for instance, 800 nanometers, you are going to have a big boost. And this boost, of course, for 4 gamma square, you take 1 EV, 4 gamma square, if you have 50, you know, that's it's easily in the KeV range. And, of course, very efficient. If you do the math, of course, for gamma of 100, you have photons of 40 kilovolts, and the efficiency is extremely high, okay? Close to 1, okay? Well, if it's 10%, you know, close to 1. So very, very large, because, of course, the laser itself has a lot of energy, okay? So it may have joules of energy, okay? So you could get maybe joules of X-ray like this. Okay, so now, of course, this is extremely exciting, okay, now for atto science, because let me show you that now we are able, with laser pulse, in a petawatt regime, but in a femtosecond regime, we are able to produce atto second of XUV, atto second of electrons, atto second of pulses of atto second durations of X-rays, okay? So, of course, now you can play, right? You can do experiments, and you can excite your sample with attosecond XUV, probe it with electrons, you know, and so on. So this is it's remarkable because, you know, in a relatively small systems, you have basically all these possibilities. Okay, and you can do your 4D imaging of electronic motion, okay, in atom, molecule, and solids. So of course, this is a very big part of the ELI project. Let's see. Now, okay. Well, now, can we do? What could optics do in high energy physics? Okay. And so I'm coming back to these slides where we have 10 to the 23 watt per square centimeter, for instance, okay? We shoot that in 50 microns, and we have these electrons, these protons. And like Sasha showed, that we can produce 5 GeV protons, okay? Short bursts of protons, attosecond bursts of protons. They are relativistic, so they don't spread, okay, anymore. And so what can you do? I showed you that. So, in fact, you have electron bunch, proton bunch, and they're very short. And so you could really take this proton, shoot a target here, produce pions. And now these pions, of course, have a lifetime, limited lifetime, you know, 20 nanoseconds or more. So what you like to do, of course, is to increase the lifetime of these pions. Okay, in 20 nanoseconds, if you have a particle which lasts 20 nanoseconds, that is 6 meters, if you increase its mass, you don't have much time, because that means, you know, if you want to increase to the GeV regime, okay, it will take you kilometers to do it. So you cannot do it, basically. But here, because you have this violence, this prompt acceleration, you can do it, okay? Because now you produce these pions, and now you can imagine that you have a short pulse coming here. It will have to be, you know, of course, a big short pulse. I mean, very lot of muscles, and you you will be able right now to increase the lifetime or to increase the energy of the protons and increase the lifetime of these muons, pions. Sorry. Pions, increase the lifetime of the pions here, and the pions is going to decay. Okay? It's going to decay in muons and neutrinos, so you will be able now to produce beams of muons and neutrinos. Okay? It's very exciting. Okay, now, the other, of course, intriguing question is, of course, ultra-intensity and general relativity and black hole. And of course, you can produce these incredible accelerations. Okay, the accelerations basically will be in a range of 10 to the 25 to 10 to the 30 g. Okay, and of course, if you evoke the main postulate of general relativity, which says, you know, gravity equals acceleration, then you can say, you know, huge acceleration correspond in terms of gravity field, okay? And so you can find, you would like to find the size of the black hole, and you can, I mean, of course, what you find out is, in order to get this type of acceleration, you have to be near a black hole. Now, what will be the size of this black hole? You can find that relatively easily. They will be for A naught. There's a very simple relation. Size of a black hole directly is inversely proportional to A naught. Okay? And the wavelength of the laser. So it's the wavelength of the laser divided by A naught, roughly speaking. So A naught of 1, you have black hole of 1 micron, or equivalent. A naught of 10 to the 6, if you are able really to go to the Schrödinger limit, means A naught of 10 to the 6. That means you have a black hole of the size of a Schrödinger of Compton wavelength. I'm sorry. So, of course, don't ask me questions. You know, after this, I will give you, by the way, the telephone number of Toshida Jima. So, if you have questions, you can give him a call. He's in Japan, so careful about Okay, so now, of course, if you have this very, very small black hole with this huge gravitational field, then you can find that in order to observe Hawking radiation, that is, that the pair will be broken, okay, by the gravitational field, you find the size of black hole, that means the size of basically A naught, of intensity, of 10 to the 30 watt per square centimeter. Now, also, again, I mean, I'm going to give you, as I say, Toshi Tajima phone number is right here. Okay. Okay. So, now you, of course, if you have these violent accelerations, you know, the distance between your horizon decreases. If the distance becomes so small, then the wavelength, you know, of wave function, so wave function can tunnel through, then you can see it apparently, and you can also detect extra dimension. You know that now the Gauss law has been detected. I think it's been checked at the centimeter size. Okay, well, maybe by using these very high intensity lasers, you could really check the Gauss law up to the n equal 4 dimensions. Okay, I'm sorry, it's n extra dimensions. Okay. Okay, so in conclusions, of course, what I'd like to say is right now, of course, optics until now, basically, until 10 years ago or so, you know, was really physics atoms, right? And you have seen this conference, basically, everything which was discussed was atomic physics. But now, of course, you understand that optics is going to penetrate into, you know, the nuclear physics field, into high energy physics, into astrophysics, into cosmology, okay? And the energy characteristics, okay, which was typically of the EV in atomic physics, now will certainly go, you know, over maybe 10, 15, or 20 years to the beta electron volt, okay? And I believe that, okay? And also another way to see the impact of all this work is that you see that we'll be able really to re-explore different strata of matter, okay, up to maybe the quark level, where by now we are really somewhere here. Okay. So it's exciting, of course. Now, I'd like to use a few minutes now to describe a little bit what has been presented to Europe, okay, and which is called the Extreme Light Infrastructure, ELI, okay, and extreme by its pulse duration, extreme by its intensity, extreme by the energy of its radiation and particles, okay. And recently in June, okay, ELI was selected to be on the European roadmap of the very large infrastructure. You can learn about ELI on this website here. This is basically, in fact, it's a scientific case of ELI. Okay? So now we have a lot of work to do because we have this infrastructure. Right now, I mean, to build an exawatt system would cost us something like 200 million euros. Okay? So it's something which is needs, of course, a lot of work and. But anyway, it relies, I mean, basically, it has three scientific pillars, okay? The first one is, of course, the interaction, light-matter interaction in this very, very ultra-high intensity regime, okay? And the second is, of course, at the second size, okay? Because, of course, always this intensity, this very large intensity, it's a way, okay, to produce short pulses. That's the way I see it, okay? And so that also we will be able to explore certainly at the second, going to the second field, okay? And also what we would like to do is to have, in this infrastructure, we would have to have dedicated beams, okay? That will be dedicated really to user, okay? Because they will be so very unique, okay? Now, you see, with if you 1GeV recently has been produced, okay, 1GeV electrons has been produced with 30 terawatt pulses, okay. Now you can see how many GeV you will be able to. Of course, maybe proportionality is not right, to it's fallacious, but nevertheless, okay. You see, for instance, 30 terawatt to produce 1GeV. If you have 1,000 times this, okay, which means if you have 30 petawatt, you should be able to produce TeV. And in fact, if you look at the number a little bit more closely, well, you find this answer, roughly. Okay? So with this, it's very appealing to see that we will be able to produce maybe up to the TeV, in fact, maybe more than a TeV, okay, with the ELI system. So it's, of course, it's extremely extremely exciting. So the exawatt will be, in fact, composed of a front end. The front end will be designed and built by the Garkin group, by Ferenc Kraus group. Okay, here we are talking 5 joules, 5 femtoseconds. Very challenging, 100 to 1,000. I don't like this number, 1,000. Even myself, I found it too hard. But anyway, I mean, very high wet weight, so that would be a petawatt, very high wet weight. And then the first phase of this program called for the construction of one beam, okay? And one beam should be able to put out something like 40 to 70 petawatt, okay? With one shot per minute, with a little bit more money, you could go one shot a second, but one shot per minute is already pretty good. So that you have a single beam line and 70 petawatt. And then if this is successful, then we'll add more, you know, 4 or 5 beam lines, and in order to get into really the regime between 100 petawatt to an exawatt system. And what calls for 10 kilojoule in 10 femtoseconds, that's the exawatt, and 1 kilojoule in 10 femtoseconds, this is for the 0.1 exawatt. That you can really do the type of work which was already simulated by Sasha, you know, in the simulation. So it's very exciting, and there's a lot of participating countries right now, you know, France, Germany, United Kingdom, Spain, Italy, Greece, Lithuania, and Austria, and that has just started, okay? So now, just finish, and I'd like to thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay, we have a few minutes for questions.
So, since you brought up zeptoseconds, this is really kind of a comment, but it's really also kind of a question and challenge master ultrafast laser designer, and it's this: this Schwinger limit. You presented this simple calculation of the Schwinger limit, which is approximately right, and basically the idea is that you accelerate an electron, a relativistic electron, to high enough energy to be able to pair produce in a Compton wavelength. That's where the number is 10 to the 29 watts per square centimeter. That's the field required to do that. In a Compton wavelength, it'll accelerate up to mc squared.
That's right. I mean, you have to accelerate these electrons in a kind of a valence.
Exactly. And we've all seen this or even talked about it in talks, right? So one thing that isn't much discussed, and you didn't actually mention it either, is, okay, so how long does that take? It doesn't take a full cycle. And the answer is, it takes...
Yota second.
I think it's 10 to the minus 21. I think it takes about 2 times 10 to the minus 21 seconds.
10 to the minus 24. Yota second. I did the calculation.
Okay, so I guess I'm wrong. So, but my challenge is the same.
No, it's very simple. I mean, it's right.
But the challenge is the same. So how could we get to that timescale? Because that, of course, would be the interesting timescale for an electron interacting with the quantum mechanical vacuum.
Well, you know, as I said, here we are really stretching, okay? I'm not going to put my hand in the fire here, but it's... okay, of course, you know, a yota second, it's also, you know, the time for the electromagnetic wave to go across the dimensions of an electron, right? Or a it's even bigger one. I mean, so of that order, okay? It's about that. Factor 2 parity. Now, if I am extrapolating this curve, okay, which says I will be, let's see, I said at 10, I need a naught of 10 to the A not 10 to the 3 to get to the zeptosecond, I mean, thousand zeptosecond. One femtosecond, thousand zeptosecond. Okay. Now I'm going to take about 3 orders of magnitude. So I think with A not of 10 to the 6, I should be able to get in this limit. But I have to do this. Math more carefully, but I'm not going to claim that we are going to time resolve the breaking of the pair, okay? Like we can now try to time resolve really the tunneling of the electrons, okay? But we have to work on that. We have to ask for more money on that.
It's, of course, if you just rely on this lambda cube regime and don't set any filter, it's the scaling you get probably. Mm-hmm. It scales like 1 over A. However, if you just remove all lower harmonics, you can reach zeptoseconds much, much earlier, at amplitude 20 maybe. So it's within reach.
I'm not picky.
Years.
I'm not picky. I know that we have a lot of room, okay?
Right.
We have a lot of gears under the paddle. You know, this is very slow. I mean, we are not picky. Already with the numbers we are talking about, we should be in a zeptosecond regime, filtering or not filtering. Okay, we should have zeptosecond features. Okay, with the corner. Now, by now.
Function of wavelength. Let's in the scientific case of FEL machine, I saw some kind of calculation in that sense. I mean, for example, if you have a 1 kV radiation and you have 10 to 21, or let's say 10 to 22, or even above, watt per square centimeter, but there. You have a Pondé motive force which is quite weak.
Very weak, yeah.
So, do you have some just idea or what is this relativistic regime is somehow different because the Pondé motive force is very weak?
Well, the regime is different, as you say.
Yeah.
Okay, so we
but
have
this
to
is,
use it as such.
But this is relativistic optics already. I mean, if you look at the intensity, you shake.
Yeah, but I mean, this one, you have, clearly, the particles are relativistic or ultra-relativistic.
Yeah.
By looking at the electrons. You can focus more. Faster.
Yeah, yeah, that's but the point focus. Also. You can focus to the wavelength also.
Yeah.
Or
mm-hmm.
angstrom.
Yeah, we, You know, I just
I think it's some over. It's in the horizon. It's somewhere also yeah. in your horizon of relativistic optics, changing just the wavelength to kV. Or
certainly, I mean, we will be able to anyway to produce massive amount of X-rays, of coherent X-rays. Okay, as I said, if you have a kilojoules of visible photon, okay, and you are producing, you know, gamma rays, you know, by using precisely, you know, coherent tampon scattering with, you know, 100% efficiency or in that order, you know, you have kilojoules of X-rays or gamma rays that you can focus on an extremely small
And explore new regimes.
Very volume. So, a new regime.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. So just a comment.
Did I understand it correctly that because of this effect that Sasha has calculated, charge separation, you can get a large increase in the field compared to the field of the laser itself?
It's the same.
Is it the same?
So it's about the same. That's a big thing.
Yeah.
It is about simple, I mean, of the order of. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's not anything.
Hmm? Yeah, it's a longitudinal, you know, of course.
But it's not anything that will help you to polarize vacuum at lower intensities.
Why not?
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah. The problem, you are going to have difficulties, you know, to dissociate, you know, the electron and positrons if you have really a lot of electrons around and a lot of positron around, you know, of proton around.
So if you take this effect into account...
You have to do this experiment, you know, vacuum breaking in absolutely the best vacuum possible. Mm. You don't want that to do that in a plasma.
But if you take this effect into account, you expect some pair production at 10 to the 23 watt per square centimeter of laser intensity?
No. Because, as I said, the DC field, roughly speaking, is the same than really the transverse field of the laser. And we know that in order to go to the Schwinger limit, you need 10 to the 30 or 10 to the 29 watt per square centimeter. So you cannot do it this way. You cannot do it in this field that is produced by the charge separations.
Well, let's thank Professor Moreau for pointing us to this ever receding horizon.
Thank you.